Discovery has a new streaming service, and it's getting all the buzz. We're going to talk about it on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is made possible thanks to California Closets, located in DeWitt. California Closets can help you get organized for the new year with custom storage solutions for the closet, home office, kitchen pantry, and more. Online at californiaclosets.com.
Discovery launched its new streaming service, Discovery Plus, where you can find content from all the brands under the Discovery umbrella, including HGTV, Food Network, TLC, and others. It also means that they've entered the fray of offering original content only available through the streaming platform, including documentaries like Attack of the Murder Hornets.
As I approached the hive, I looked down, and there were thousands of bees that had been slaughtered. I was just praying to God that once I opened the hive, I would find the queen still alive. But as soon as I opened up that lid and I peered in, all hope was gone at that point. 60,000 of my honeybees had their heads chopped off. It's kind of like finding a family pet or maybe even like a family member that got killed and you have no idea who did it or what the heck happened.
It's a race against time as scientists, local governments, and community members search for an invasive insect that threatens to upend the North American ecosystem. Full of suspense and intrigue, Attack of the Murder Hornets is more murder mystery and true crime documentary than it is traditional nature film. Here to discuss the film is the filmmaker himself, Michael Paul Stevenson. Michael Paul Stevenson, welcome to Pop Life. How are you, sir?
Doing well this morning. Thanks for having me here.
So you got a brand new film out on Discovery Plus. Brand new platform, so we're great to have a new streaming platform with fresh original content. That's all great. Before we jump into the film Attack of the Murder Hornets, talk a little bit about how you got into documentary filmmaking. Now, you have a background as an actor. I know you've done some other films. This is what, your fourth film,
yeah.
And about three television series, and including shows like Touched by an Angel. So how did you come to documentary filmmaking?
Well, Joe, I was a child actor of all things. I started acting when I was a kid. It was sort of like my soccer. Like, I loved to act. And eventually, the first movie that I ever auditioned for, I actually ended up getting the starring role in this film called Troll 2, which has become known as the worst movie ever made. And that's a whole other story, Joe. But the interesting thing about it all is I was terribly and dreadfully embarrassed by that movie when I was 10 years old. It came out, you know, a couple of years, I made it when I was 10, came out a couple of years later. I thought it would go away forever, and it didn't. It became a cult phenomenon.
Isn't that? I mean, that's crazy that a 10-year-old would be embarrassed about being in a movie.
Yeah. Well, once you see it, you'd understand. But it actually led me to making my first doc 10 years ago, a documentary called Best Worst Movie, where I tell the story of that movie and my experience in it as it sort of rises from flop to cult phenomenon. And ironically, that documentary, Best Worst Movie, the first film I ever made, put a blip on the map for me as a filmmaker, and led to my subsequent projects. And I did another documentary called The American Scream, and then I also did a Netflix original movie called Girlfriend's Day, which is a scripted dark comedy, completely different.
Bob Odenkirk.
He wrote that and starred in it. And then of all things, I ended up finding myself making another doc about a gigantic hornet.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to spring of 2020 when we were all hit with COVID-19, not all personally affected, but it gripped the nation. And then in the headlines, we get something called a murder hornet. And I remember turning to my wife saying, this feels like the end of days. We have plague, we have pestilence, and the when you throw murder on in the name of any creature, it's going to capture the imagination of the public. But at a time when we are all on lockdown and worried about our safety and future, having something like that, this invasive insect species come to America, sort of had us in its grips. So how did you turn that thing that happened into a film?
Well, so I, like, just like you, I mean, in that period of time, I was going nowhere and was pretty down, Joe, and read an article that was in the New York Times, which was the first article about the murder hornet in the U.S. That would have been May, early May. And I just remember thinking same thing, like, oh boy, what now? Now we have murder hornets? What? This is crazy. But what really caught me specifically about the story was the characters that were on the front lines of this thing that could become a very serious issue. You had beekeepers, you had government pest control workers trying to essentially stop the further establishment of the Asian giant hornet. And that, it just felt like an impossible mission. And it felt like a wonderful chance to tell a character story. So from that, my wife, actually, I was trying to figure out who I pitched the story to as a filmmaker. And my wife said, hey, well, why not Discovery? And I thought, oh, I'm sure, why not? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't worked with Discovery previously. And I really didn't know what their response would be to a movie about a gigantic hornet. Mm-hmm. And I ended up pitching it over Zoom, just like you and I are meeting now. And my first piece of art was this gigantic hornet that was hovering over these scientists. And Howard, who is the executive producer on this film, Howard Schwartz, we just connected around the film, and I just connected with him. And it just felt like this, again, characters who were against all odds, mm-hmm. right? Trying to stop this thing. My wife came home. I'd shoot her and the kids out of the house because it was noisy. And she came home and she's like, well, how'd it go? I was like, I think that my next movie is going to be about this gigantic murder hornet. Wow. And then we ended up coming up to Northern Washington for the past several months to make this thing.
So it doesn't feel like a traditional nature documentary. It really does come across like a true crime documentary. Was that intentional?
Yeah, here's the thing. I never considered it like natural history. You know, I love the blue planets and the Attenboroughs and these, but that's not me. Like, the thing that gives me enough gas to actually see something through is if I get engaged with people and characters, right? So that's where it always starts. Then the second part of that is okay, how do I tell this story? How do I create a world that engages with people in an interesting way and entertains them? And in using that entertainment as a way to just smuggle in themes that are pretty important, right? Mm-hmm. And so with this film, it naturally felt like a horror movie at the beginning. It felt like a science fiction drama. It felt like science in real time. I mean, you've got man and beast, right? like facing off. And so it just fell, and you had the murder mystery.
Yeah.
You've got a beekeeper who's, you know, 60,000 of his bees had their heads chopped off.
Yes.
So right off the beginning, it was like, oh, well, yeah. Like, what does this look like through the lens of a mystery or through a crime drama or a science fiction or a horror film? So I hope that, I'm glad you picked up on that, because it's something that was really important.
Yeah, no, it was. That's the way it flows. I've been watching a lot of that stuff recently, so it just felt natural to be watching something that felt like a true crime drama. You mentioned science fiction and fantasy. The way it started also reminded me a little bit of Stranger Things. Was that an intentional choice?
That's funny. Well, you know, maybe subconsciously. I mean, my kids, I have three daughters, they love Stranger Things. And so 13, 10, and 5. And they didn't know anything about this film when I was making it, other than I had brought a couple of live murder hornets home one day, and they were excited. Anyway, I showed them an early cut of the film, and afterwards, my 13-year-old was like, "Dad, like, wait a second. Like, we thought you were making some boring science movie. Like, this feels like a weird version of Stranger Things." And they really loved it. So I can't say that at the beginning was like, "Oh, this is," you know, but I think because of the impact it had, because of the love that I have for genre films and science fiction, it certainly influenced.
So you mentioned having strong characters. The murder hornet is obviously the antagonist. Who do you see as the protagonist, the heroes of this movie?
Oh man, well, I never would have imagined. I mean, that's the fun things about nonfiction is, you learn and are hit as you're in the story with things that you didn't really necessarily see coming. And with this story specifically, to see these public service workers, the small government office, and to see, you know, Chris Looney, who's the scientist or the entomologist that's really on the hunt for this thing, like, to me, I looked at him, I'm like, that guy's a hero. You know, like, here's a guy specifically who wants to do his job well and is under a lot of public scrutiny to find this thing and doesn't want to be somebody, you know, who's a slug sitting in public office just taking up public money. And so amazing to see that faction of government work with the system. Then you have somebody like Ruthie, you know, who's essentially, you know, she's a beekeeper, but she's really one of these women who just like gets in and makes a difference because she can. And if she doesn't, who will? Mm-hmm. Right. For me, it's like, it's hard for me to be like, oh, this, I love it. It's like asking me to tell you which one of my daughters I love more. Right. Mm-hmm. I probably love one more, but I'd never admit it. The characters in the film, I have a real genuine respect for on a number of levels. But if you were to ask me to say, well, who's the hero of this movie? Man, that's tough.
The community itself is like a character. The community coming together to put out traps, to share information. It really was sort of amazing to see. I'll tell you one of the things that I really loved about this, and I watched it early this morning because I wanted to be fresh in my head when I spoke with you, that one of the things that kept me engaged from start to finish was this time-sensitive urgency around it. I mean, right. you have an invasive species that, if allowed to spread, can cause significant damage to our ecosystem. Talk about how you capitalized on that urgency.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, by and large, from the moment that I stepped into the story, there's a ticking clock, right? And there's a very narrow window, just given the season, for them to have any chance of doing what they did. And look, at the beginning, there's no guarantee that we would even have found a single hornet. So it is a... It's again one of those gifts of documentary and nonfiction where you have to follow this story day in, day out, every minute, because you just don't know when they're gonna, you know, most of the time they're not finding anything, you know. Like, I mean, it's in respect to the invasive species, the other thing is that, you know, if they don't make a difference now, they don't do something now, then eventually we get to the point where it's a huge problem and everybody says, well, why didn't we do something when we knew?
Right.
So you have this small community of beekeepers, scientists, government, you know, public service workers who are literally, like, trying to outrun the window of opportunity to stop this thing. Mm-hmm. And even with them finding a single nest this year, doesn't mean that's the only nest. Like the species has to go 3 years, I believe, without having a single sighting for it to be considered truly eradicated.
You had some real gems in that. Were you nervous at all about not finding anything when you set out to film?
You always are.
You lucked up. Not only were you with them when they found the nest, but you found this homeowner who the bees kept coming around his property. So you lucked up there. And let's backtrack for a second, because we didn't really set this thing up. You have a situation where the beekeeper in Washington State in the Pacific Northwest discovers his bees have been decapitated. We learned from you that the murder hornets decapitate these bees to eat. What part of the body are they eating?
Well, the thorax. They'll drag the thorax back to their nest. Right.
And so he gets concerned and he reports it or goes on Reddit, tries to find out what might have done this. And someone finds a hornet and puts it out there to find out what kind of creature this is. And so we have all these converging groups and people coming together to try to figure this thing out and ultimately discover that it is a murder hornet that I think originally was spotted in Canada, in Vancouver.
So the first nest was in Nanaimo, just outside of Vancouver in Canada. That was in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then the discovery here on the other side of the border here in Washington State, it was Ted's Hives, the colony that got attacked and beheaded. That would have been December of 2019, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was the first instance where, okay, we have this thing here now in our country.
Mm-hmm. And so you have this race for time to find this nest. Was your filmmaker, Richard Wong, at all concerned about traipsing through the forest to find murderous hornets?
Yeah. So Rich and I, we're so close that even if he was concerned, I wouldn't care. We actually shot our last movie together, the Netflix movie, and him and I shot this together. And we were both on, I had a camera, he had a camera, and we were marching through the woods and the blackberry thorns. But Rich knows, he's one of these guys who just does not stop, mm-hmm. right? And is so thoughtful and knows, filmmaking, it's like you get in the trenches with people. Mm-hmm. Once you've been in the trenches with them, you know, that's just how Rich and I are. But you know, we didn't know. Like, I knew that I could find, I love characters, right? And I mm-hmm. knew that I would find interesting characters. I knew that I would find people that were passionate about this issue, but also really like trying to make a difference. I knew these sorts of things, but there was no guarantee. In fact, we thought as we went on week after week, it got to the point where we thought, man, they may not find a nest this year.
Right. Those traps kept coming up empty.
Yeah. And I was working a plan in my head. I was like, well, shoot, if they don't find a nest, I got to figure out how I'm going to end this thing. And actually the scene where they're in the park towards the end trying out the new technology, I had gone there. It's one of the latter things we had shot, but I had gone there thinking, okay, I need to start talking about what's for next year and try to figure that out. And the end of that day, they got a call that there was another hornet captured by Philip, the homeowner. And so we went up there, and that ended up being the hornet that led us.
Yeah, it's a really great film. I really enjoyed it. It's full of suspense. Even just moments like they're trying to glue the tracker onto the back of the bee, and they're accidentally gluing the wings, and it's like, come on, guys, get this thing right. You know, you have plot twists in here. One, I don't want to spoil it. It involves the nest. But the other I will mention, because I just find it interesting and I want to get your opinion on it, was the actual landowner where the nest was found decided that he wanted to keep the bees in the nest so he could hustle them off on eBay. I mean, I know you're a filmmaker, so you're kind of objective about this stuff. Some of your characters were not too pleased with his decision, thought that science should have this stuff to really study it and try to make some gains on it. But what did you think about his decision to want to do that?
Well, first it was a big surprise, right? Like and that is the thing about this movie, is it continues to surprise you. And that was something that you just would never see coming. Second was, it's not unlike the struggle of science, right? Constantly up against unforeseen obstacles. And then third, you know, like Chris, the scientist in there says, like, look, you know, it's hard for me to fault somebody without sounding moralizing or grandstanding. And that gave me a whole new level of respect just for Chris, because talk about self-sacrifice,
yeah.
Right? Like, I wouldn't have thought that way. It's a big surprise. And at the same time, you know, it's also a perspective. Like, I think that's the thing that's, for me, that's interesting about the story, is if you're getting everyone's individual perspective on this thing that they all touch in a weird way, this hornet, right? You've got a science guy who's very pragmatic and practical and rational. You've got a, you got a beekeeper whose family was literally attacked. You've got a community worker who's like, I just want to do good. And you've got a landowner who's like, this is my land. Like, I want it. And look, this is a hard, on top of all that, this is a hard year for everyone. I guess summarily, it was a feeling of, wow, science, like the struggle, even at this point, discovery, science is still struggling to get ahead. And it was a really interesting way to see that.
Outstanding. Fantastic film. Was there anything that you learned about either this situation that you didn't know before, or learned about yourself as a filmmaker, that you, when you walk away from this, that was aside from the payday and the success of getting this thing produced at the end of it, what made you feel really good?
Oh boy. I guess one of the biggest things that I didn't see coming into this story, you know, to be honest, Joe, like my worry was just working with the government. Like, initially as a filmmaker, like the bureaucracy, the red tape, all these things that you hear about government and working with the government, they exist for a reason. And I had never, you know, I'm pretty easygoing. And so at the beginning of this project, it was like, okay, how is this going to be? And to see them embrace this, and not only embrace it, but give me just trust and access and support, that has me thinking about government in a whole other way, right?
Yeah.
And so much credit goes to the Washington State Department of Agriculture, because they didn't know what we were doing at the beginning. They didn't have it, you know, and they were, couldn't have been more supportive. And so at the end of the day, like, I had never, again, and also I look at bugs differently, right? Mm-hmm. I look at insects and now I'm noticing moths that are flying around our porch light. Like, we you know, like, everything is, as Ruthie says, everything is connected. And that is something that will take with me for a while. I hike now and I'm like, oh wow, I get excited about a little beetle, because I've spent so much time with Chris in the woods and he's told me so many different things about bugs. So that was a big deal, but the overemphasize this, but the role that public service workers play with the public, that's, I've never really ever given it much thought, and more just taking it, you know, I guess, for granted. And to see people that are really doing their job really well within an office, a public office, it's sure refreshing.
Yeah, you're right. I do and will look at bugs differently after watching this. And I think that's the true mark of a successful documentary. I watched the documentary, My Octopus Friend, and I will never eat. And I love octopus. I will never eat another octopus again in my life. This is great stuff here. You have animation in it. You captured some tender moments. So it's not all, high energy and urgency. You captured the young girl who was sad to see a bee get captured and killed. You have one of the scientists, one of the entomologists, I thought was a little emotional about the public reaction to the first time they failed to find or track the net. Yeah. And so they took a public beating for that. So, you know, we can be ungrateful at times as a society, but I think you did a great job capturing all that stuff. Attack of the Murder Hornets, a documentary film by Michael Paul Stevenson. Michael, thank you very much for joining us on Pop Life.
Joe, thanks. My pleasure.
Attack of the Murder Hornets' non-traditional treatment of the nature documentary takes the viewer on an unforgettable ride of intrigue and suspense, and the discovery that, left unattended, the Asian giant hornet, aka the murder hornet, can tip the scales of the delicate balance of our ecosystem. The film is available now on Discovery Plus. Thanks again to Michael Paul Stevenson for being our guest. Discover more episodes of Pop Life at WAER.org or subscribe for free for future shows. Pop Life is a product of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee.